is reasonable, he said. I shall join you. Luke dropped his face in his hands. Through his teeth, Magnus said, Raphael, you have truly lived down to my lowest expectations of you. Magnus, it doesn't matter, said Luke. He was being protective, Magnus knew. Raphael had already gone to stand by Sebastian's side. Let him go. He's no loss. Raphael snorted. No loss, you say, he said. I am well quit of you idiots flopping about this cell, whining about your friends and lovers. You are weak, and have always been weak. I should have let you walk into the daylight, Magnus said, and his voice was ice. Raphael flinched. It was barely a movement, but Magnus saw it. Not that it brought him much satisfaction. Sebastian saw the flinch, though, and the look in his dark eyes intensified. From his belt he produced a knife, thin, with a narrow blade. A misericord. A mercy killer. The kind of blade that was meant to pierce through the gaps in armor and deliver a killing stroke. Raphael, seeing the flash of metal, stepped back quickly, but Sebastian only smiled and flipped the blade in his hand. He offered it to Raphael, hilt first. Take it, he said. Raphael reached out a hand, his eyes suspicious. He took the knife and held it, dangling loosely. Vampires had little use for weapons. They were their own weapons. Very good, said Sebastian. Now let us seal our agreement in blood. Kill the warlock. The blade dropped from Raphael's hand and clattered to the ground. With a look of irritation, Sebastian bent and snatched it up, putting it back into the vampire's hand. We do not kill with knives, Raphael said, staring from the blade to Sebastian's cold expression. You do now, said Sebastian. I won't have you tearing out his throat. Too messy. Too easy to get it wrong. Do as I tell you. Go to the warlock and stab him to death. Cut his throat, pierce his heart, however you like. Raphael turned toward Magnus. Luke started forward. Magnus held up a warning hand. Luke, he said, don't. Raphael, if you do this, there will be no peace between the pack and the knight's children. Not now, or ever again, Luke said, his eyes gleaming with a green shine. Sebastian laughed. You can't imagine you'll ever hold sway over a pack again, can you, Lucian Greymark? When I win this war, and I will rule with my sister beside me, and keep you in a cage for her to throw bones to when it amuses her. Raphael took another step toward Magnus. His eyes were enormous. His throat had been kissed so many times by the crucifix he wore that the scar never left. The blade gleamed in his hand. If you think Clary would tolerate, Luke began, and then turned away. He moved toward Raphael, but Sebastian was already in front of him, blocking his way with the Morgenstern blade. With a strange detachment, Magnus watched Raphael approach him. Magnus's heart was thudding in his chest. He was aware of that much, but he did not feel afraid. He had been close to death many times. So many that the idea no longer frightened him. Sometimes he thought some part of him longed for it, for that unknown country, the one place he had never been, that one experience as yet unlived. The tip of the knife touched his neck. Raphael's hand was shaking. Magnus felt the sting as the blade nicked the hollow of his throat. That's right, said Sebastian with a feral grin. Cut his throat. Let the blood run out over the floor. He has lived too many years. Magnus thought of Alec then, of his blue eyes and steady smile. He thought of walking away from Alec in the tunnels under New York. He thought of why he'd done it. Yes, Alec's willingness to see Camille had angered him, but it was more than that. He remembered Tessa weeping in his arms in Paris, and thinking that he had never known the loss she felt, because he had never loved like she had, and that he was afraid that someday he would, and like Tessa, he would lose his mortal love, and that it was better to be the one who died than the one who lived on. He had dismissed that later as a morbid fantasy and had not remembered it again until Alec. It had torn at him to walk away from Alec. But for an immortal to love a mortal, that had been the destruction of gods. And if gods had been destroyed by it, Magnus could hardly hope for better. He looked up at Raphael through his eyelashes. "You remember," he said in a low voice, so low he doubted Sebastian could hear him. "You know what you owe me." "You saved my life," Raphael said, but his voice was numb. "A life I never wanted." "Show me your serious Santiago," said Sebastian. "Kill the warlock." Raphael's hand tightened on the hilt of the knife. His knuckles were white. He spoke to Magnus. "I have no soul," he said, "but I made you a promise on my mother's doorstep, and she was sacred to me." "Santiago," Sebastian began. "I was a child then. I am not now." The knife fell to the floor. Raphael turned and looked at Sebastian, his wide dark eyes very clear. "I cannot," he said. "I will not. I owe him a debt from many years ago." Sebastian was very still. "You disappoint me, Raphael," he said, and sheathed the Morgenstern sword. He stepped forward and picked up the knife at Raphael's feet, turning it over in his hand. A bit of light sparked along the blade, a singeing teardrop of fire. "You disappoint me very much," he said. And then, too swiftly for the eye to follow, he drove the blade into Raphael's heart.
It was freezing inside the hospital morgue. Maya wasn't shivering, but she could feel it, like the points of needles against her skin. Katerina was standing against the bank of steel compartments that held corpses, which ran along one wall. The yellowish fluorescent lights made her look washed out, a pale blue blur in green scrubs. She was muttering under her breath in a strange language that made chills run up Maya's spine. "Where is it?" Bat asked. He was holding a wicked-looking hunting knife in one hand and a large kennel-sized cage in the other. He dropped the cage with a clang, his gaze sweeping the room. Two bare steel tables stood in the center of the morgue. As Maya stared, one of them began inching forward. Its wheels dragged along the tile floor. Katerina pointed. "There," she said. Her gaze was on the cage. She made a gesture with her fingers, and the cage seemed to vibrate and spark. "Under the table." "You don't say," Lily drawled, clicking forward in her heels. She bent down to peer under the table, then leaped back with a shriek. She sailed through the air and landed on one of the countertops, where she perched like a bat, her black hair tumbling down out of its ponytail. "It's hideous," she said. "It's a demon," said Katerina. The table had stopped moving. "Probably a Dantalion or some other ghoul type. They feed on the dead." "Oh, for goodness sake," said Maya, taking a step forward. Before she reached the table, Bat kicked it with a booted foot. It went over with a clang, revealing the creature underneath. Lily had been right. It was hideous. It was about the size of a large dog, but it resembled a ball of grayish, pulsing intestines, studded with malformed kidneys and nodes of pus and blood. A single yellow, weeping eye glared out from among the jumble of organs. "Ew," said Bat. "I told you," said Lily, just as a long rope of intestines shot out from the demon and wrapped around Bat's ankle, jerking hard. He fell to the floor with a wince-inducing crash. "Bat," Maya cried, but before she needed to move, he whipped around and slashed with his knife through the pulsing matter that held him. He scrambled back as demon ichor sprayed across the floor. "So gross," Lily said. She was seated on the counter now, holding up an oblong metal object, her phone, as if it would ward the demon off. Bat scrambled to his feet as the demon skittered towards Maya. She kicked out at it, and it rolled back with an angry squishing noise. Bat looked down at his knife. The metal was melting, dissolved by the ichor. He dropped it with a noise of disgust. "Weapons," he said, casting around. "I need a weapon." Maya seized a scalpel off a nearby table and flung it. It stuck into the creature with a slimy noise. The demon squealed. A moment later, the scalpel shot back out of it as if it had been ejected from a particularly powerful toaster. It skidded along the floor, melting and sizzling. "Ordinary weapons don't work on them." Katerina stepped forward, raising her right hand. It was surrounded by blue flame. "Only ruined blades."
"Then let's get some of those,"
Bak gasped, backing away as the pulsing creature scooted toward him.
"Only shadow hunters can use them," Katerina cried, and a bolt of blue fire shot from her hand. It struck the creature squarely, sending it rolling over and over.
Bat seized hold of the cage and banged it down in front of the demon, yanking up the hatch just as the demon rolled inside. Maya slammed the hatch down and threw the bolt, locking the demon inside. They all backed away, staring in horror as it hissed and threw itself around the confines of its warlock-strengthened prison. All except Lily, who was still pointing her phone at it.
"Are you filming this?" Maya demanded.
"Maybe," Lily said. Katerina drew her sleeve across her brow.
"Thanks for the help," she said. "Even warlock magic can't kill Dantalians, they're tough."
"Why are you filming this?" Maya said to Lily. The vampire girl shrugged.
"When the cat is away, the mice will play. Always good to remind the mice that in this case, when the cat is away, the mice will all be eaten by demons. I'm going to send this video file to every one of our downworld contacts around the world. Just a reminder that there are demons we need shadow hunters to destroy. That's why they exist."
"They won't exist for long,"
hissed the Dantalian demon. Bat yelled and jumped back another foot. Maya didn't blame him. The thing's mouth had opened. It looked like a slick black tunnel lined with teeth.
"Tomorrow night is the attack. Tomorrow night is the war."
"What war?" Katerina demanded. "Tell us, creature, or when I get home, I will set to torturing you in every way I can devise."
"Sebastian Morgenstern,"
said the demon.
"Tomorrow night, he attacks Alicante. Tomorrow night, the Shadow Hunters cease to be."
A fire burned in the middle of the cave, the smoke furling up toward the high dome ceiling, lost in shadow. Simon could feel the heat from the fire, a tense crackling against his skin, more than the real sensation of warmth. He guessed it was cold in the cave, from the fact that Alec had bundled himself up in a bulky sweater and carefully wrapped a blanket around Isabel, who was sleeping stretched out on the floor, her head on her brother's lap. But Simon couldn't feel it, not really. Clary and Jace had gone to check the tunnels to make sure they were still free of demons and other possible stray nasties. Alec hadn't wanted to leave Isabel, and Simon had been too weak and dizzy to contemplate moving much. Not that he had let that fact be known. Technically, he was on watch, listening for anything that might come at them from the shadows. Alec was staring into the flames. The yellow light made him look tired, older. "Thanks," he said suddenly. Simon almost jumped. Alec hadn't said a word to him since, "What are you doing?" "For what?" "Saving my sister," said Alec. He brushed a hand through Isabel's dark hair. "I know," he said a little haltingly. "I mean, I knew, when we came here, that this could be a suicide mission. I know it's dangerous. I know I can't really expect us all to survive. But I thought it would be me, not Izzy." "Why?" Simon said. His head was pounding, his mouth dry. "Because I'd rather it was me," Alec said. "She's... Isabel. She's smart and tough and a good fighter. Better than me. She deserves to be all right. To be happy." He looked at Simon through the fire. "You have a sister, don't you?" Simon was jolted by the question. New York seemed a world, a lifetime away. "Rebecca," he said. "That's her name. And what would you do to someone who made her unhappy?" Simon eyed Alec warily. "I would reason with them," he said. "Talk it out. Maybe an understanding hug." Alec snorted and seemed about to reply. Then his head snapped around as if he'd heard something. Simon raised an eyebrow. It wasn't often a human heard something before a vampire did. A moment later, he recognized the sound himself and understood. It was Jace's voice. Illumination danced at the end of the far tunnel, and Clary and Jace appeared, Clary holding a witchlight in her hand. Even in her boots, Clary barely came to Jace's shoulder. They weren't touching, but they moved together toward the fire. Simon thought that while they had seemed like a couple ever since the first time they'd come back from Idris, they'd seemed something more now. They seemed like a team. "Anything interesting?" Alec asked as Jace came to sit beside the fire. Clary put glamour runes on the cave entrances. No one should be able to see that there's any way in here. How long will they last? Overnight, probably into tomorrow, said Clary, glancing at Izzy. What with the runes wearing off quicker here, I'll have to check them later. And I've got a better idea of where we're positioned in terms of Alicante. I'm pretty sure that rock wasteland where we were last night, Jace pointed at the rightmost tunnel, looks out over what I think used to be Brosselin Forest. Alec half closed his eyes. That's depressing. The forest was beautiful. Not anymore. Jace shook his head. Just wasteland, as far as you can see. He bent and touched Isabel's hair, and Simon felt a small pointless flare of jealousy. That he could touch her so carelessly, show his affection without thinking. How is she?
Good. Sleeping. Things should be well enough to move by tomorrow.
Jace's voice was anxious. We can't stay here. We've sent up enough warnings that we're present. If we don't get to Sebastian, he'll find us first. And we're running out of food. Simon lost Alec's murmured response. A sudden stabbing pain shot through him, and he doubled up. He felt robbed of his breath, except he didn't breathe. Nevertheless, his chest hurt, as if something had been ripped out of it.
Simon! Simon! Clary said sharply, her hand on his shoulder, and he looked up at her, his eyes streaming tears tinged with blood.
God, Simon, what's wrong?
She asked, frantic. He sat up slowly. The pain was already starting to ebb.
I don't know. It was like someone stuck a knife into my chest.
Jace was swiftly on his knees in front of him, his fingers under Simon's chin. His pale gold gaze searched Simon's face.
Raphael, Jace said finally in a flat voice. He's your sire, the one whose blood made you a vampire.
Simon nodded.
So?
Jace shook his head.
Nothing,
he muttered.
When did you last feed?
I'm fine, Simon said, but Clary had already caught at his right hand and lifted it. The gold fairy ring shone on his finger. The hand itself was dead white, the veins under the skin showing black, like a network of cracks in marble.
You're not fine, haven't you fed? You lost all that blood.
Clary,
where are the bottles you brought?
She cast around looking for his bag, and found it shoved against the wall. She yanked it toward her.
Simon, if you don't start taking better care of yourself.
Don't! He grabbed the strap of the bag away from her. She glared at him.
They broke, he said. The bottles broke. When we were fighting the demons in the Accords Hall. The blood's gone.
Clary stood up.
Simon Lewis, she said furiously. Why didn't you say something?
Say something about what? Jace moved away from Simon.
Simon's starving, Clary explained. He lost blood healing Izzy, and his supply was wrecked in the hall.
Why didn't you say something? Jace asked, rising and pushing back a lock of blonde hair.
Because, Simon said, it's not like there's animals I can feed on here.
There's us, Jace said.
I don't want to feed on my friend's blood.
Why not? Jace stepped past the fire and looked down at Simon. His expression was open and curious.
We've been here before, haven't we? Last time you were starving, I gave you my blood. It was a little homoerotic, maybe, but I'm secure in my sexuality.
Simon sighed internally. He could tell that under the flippancy, Jace was completely serious in his offer. Probably less because it was sexy than because Jace had a death wish the size of Brooklyn. I'm not biting someone whose veins are full of heavenly fire, Simon said. I have no desire to be toasted from the inside out. Clary swept her hair back, baring her throat.
Look, drink my blood. I always said you were welcome to it.
No, Jace said immediately, and Simon saw him remembering the hold in Valentine's ship, the way Simon had said,
I would have killed you. And Jace had replied, wonderingly, I would have let you.
Oh, for God's sake, I'll do it.
Alex stood up, carefully repositioning Izzy on the blanket. He tucked the edge around her and straightened. Simon let his head fall back against the wall of the cave.
You don't even like me. Now you're offering me your blood?
You saved my sister. I owe you. Alex shrugged, his shadow long and dark in the light of the flames.
Right.
Simon swallowed awkwardly.
Okay.
Clary reached her hand down. After a moment, Simon took it and let her haul him to his feet. He couldn't help staring across the room at Isabel, asleep, half-wrapped in Alex's blue blanket. She was breathing, slow and steady. Izzy, still breathing, because of him. Simon took a step toward Alec and stumbled. Alec caught him and steadied him. His grip on Simon's shoulder was hard. Simon could feel Alec's tension in it, and he suddenly realized how bizarre the situation was. Jason Clary, gawking openly at them. Alec looking as if he were bracing himself to have a bucket of ice water dumped over his head. Alec turned his head a little to the left, baring his throat. He was staring off fixedly at the opposite wall. Simon decided he looked less like someone who was about to have ice water dumped on their head, and more like someone about to endure an embarrassing exam at the doctor's office.
I'm not doing this in front of everyone, Simon announced.
It's not spin the bottle, Simon, said Clary. It's just food.
Not that you're food, Alec, she added, when he glared.
She held her hands up.
Never mind.
Oh, for the angels, Alec began, and closed his hand around Simon's upper arm.
Come on, he said,
and dragged Simon partway down the tunnel that led back toward the gate, just far enough so that the others faded out of view, disappearing behind a jut of rock. Though Simon did hear the last thing Jace said, just before they faded out of earshot.
What?
They need privacy. It's an intimate moment.
I think you should just let me die, Simon said.
Shut up, Alec said, and pushed him up against the cave wall. He eyed Simon thoughtfully.
Does it have to be my neck?
No, Simon said, feeling as if he had wandered into a bizarre dream.
Wrists are okay, too.
Alec began to push up the sleeve of his sweater. His arm was bare and pale, except where the marks were, and Simon could see his veins under the skin. Despite himself, he felt the sting of hunger, rousing him from exhaustion. He could smell blood, soft and salty, rich with the tang of daylight. Shadowhunter blood, like Izzy's. He ran his tongue along his upper teeth, and was only a little surprised to feel his canines hardening and sharpening into fangs.
I just want you to know, Alex said as he held his wrist out, that I realize that to you vampires this feeding business sometimes equals sexy times.
Simon's eyes widened.
My sister may have told me more than I wanted to know, Alec admitted.
Anyway, my point is that I am not attracted to you in the slightest.
Right, Simon said, and took Alec's hand.
He tried for a brotherly sort of grasp, but it didn't quite work, considering that he had to bend Alec's hand back to bear the vulnerable part of his wrist.
Well, you don't ring my bells either, so I guess we're even. Although you could have faked it for five.
No, I couldn't, Alec said. I hate it when straight guys think all gay guys are attracted to them.
I'm not attracted to every guy any more than you are attracted to every girl.
Simon took a deep, purposeful breath. It was always a strange feeling, breathing when he didn't need to, but it was calming. Alec, he said, chill. I don't think you're in love with me. In fact, most of the time I think you hate me. Alec paused.
I don't hate you.
Why would I hate you?
Because I'm a downworlder? Because I'm a vampire who's in love with your sister and you think she's too good for me?
Don't you? Alec said, but it was without rancor. After a moment, he smiled a little. That lightwood smile that lit up his face and made Simon think of Izzy.
She's my little sister. I think she's too good for everyone.
But you're a good person, Simon. Regardless of whether you're a vampire too. You're loyal and you're smart and you make Isabel happy. I don't know why, but you do. I know I didn't like you when I met you, but that changed. And I'd hardly judge my sister for dating a downworlder.
Simon stood very still.
Alec was all right with warlocks, he thought. That much was obvious enough. But warlocks were born what they were. Alec was the most conservative of the Lightwood children. He wasn't chaos-loving or risk-taking, like Jace and Isabel. And Simon had always felt it in him, that sense that a vampire was a human transformed into something wrong. "You wouldn't agree to being a vampire," Simon said. "Not even to be with Magnus forever, right? You didn't want to live forever. You wanted to take his immortality away. That's why he broke up with you." Alec flinched. "No," he said. "No, I wouldn't want to be a vampire." "So you do think I'm less than you," Simon said. Alec's voice cracked. "I'm trying," he said. And Simon felt it, felt how much Alec wanted to mean it, maybe even did mean it a little bit. And after all, if Simon hadn't been a vampire, he would still have been a mundane, still lesser. He felt Alec's pulse surge in the wrist he was holding. "Go ahead," Alec said, exhaling his words, clearly in an agony of waiting. "Just do it." "Brace yourself," Simon said, and lifted Alec's wrist to his mouth. Despite the tension between them, his body, hungry and deprived, responded. His muscles tightened, and his fanged teeth snapped out of their own accord. He saw Alec's eyes darken with surprise and fear. Hunger spread like a fire through Simon's body, and he spoke out of the drowning depths of it, struggling to try to say something human to Alec. He hoped he was audible enough to be understood around his fangs. "I'm sorry about Magnus." "Me too. Now bite," Alec said. And Simon did, his fangs piercing fast and clean through the skin, the blood exploding into his mouth. He heard Alec gasp, and Simon gripped involuntarily tighter, as if to prevent Alec from trying to pull away. But Alec didn't try. His wild heartbeat was audible to Simon, pounding down through his veins like the tolling of a bell. Along with Alec's blood, Simon could taste the metal of fear, the spark of pain, and the eager flame of something else, something he had tasted the first time he had drunk Jace's blood on the filthy metal floor of Valentine's ship. Maybe all Shadowhunters did have a death wish, after all. 20. The Serpents of the Dust. When Alec and Simon returned to the central cave, they found Isabel still curled asleep among a pile of blankets. Jace was sitting by the fire, leaning back on his hands, the play of light and shadow dancing across his face. Clary lay with her head on his lap, though Simon could see by the shimmer of her eyes as she watched them approach that she wasn't asleep. Jace raised his eyebrows. "Woke of shame, boys." Alec glowered. He stood with his left wrist turned in, hiding the puncture marks, though they were mostly faded thanks to the Arazi he'd put on his wrist. He hadn't pushed Simon away, had let him drink until Simon had stopped himself, and as a result, he was a little pale. "It wasn't sexy," he said. "It was a little sexy," Simon said. He felt much better, having fed, and he couldn't help but poke at Alec a bit. "It wasn't," said Alec. "I had some feelings," said Simon. "Do feel free to agonize about it on your own time," said Alec, and bent down to grab the strap of his backpack. "I'm going to take watch." Clary sat up with a yawn. "Are you sure? Do you need a blood replacement rune?" "I already put on two," Alec said. "I'll be fine." He straightened up and glanced at his sleeping sister. "Just look after Isabel, okay?" His gaze went to Simon. "Especially you, vampire." Alec headed off down the corridor, his witchlight casting his shadow, long and spidery, against the cave wall. Jason Clary exchanged a quick look before Jace scrambled to his feet and followed Alec into the tunnel. Simon could hear their voices, soft murmurs through the rock, though he couldn't make out any of the words. Alec's words echoed in his head. "Look after Isabel." He thought of Alec in the tunnel. "You're loyal and smart, and you make Isabel happy. I don't know why, but you do." The idea of making Isabel happy filled him with a sense of warmth. Simon sat down quietly beside her. She was like a cat curled up in a ball of blankets, her head pillowed on her arm. He eased himself gently down to lie next to her. She was alive because of him,
and her brother had done the closest thing he would probably ever do to giving them his blessing. He heard Clary, over on the other side of the fire, laugh softly. "Good night, Simon," she said. Simon could feel Isabel's hair, as soft as spun silk, under his cheek. "Good night," he said, and closed his eyes, his veins full of Lightwood blood. Jace caught up easily with Alec, who had paused where the cave corridor curved away toward the gate. The walls of the corridor were smooth, as if worn away by years of water or wind, not chisels, though Jace had no doubt the passages were man-made. Alec, leaning against the cave wall, clearly waiting for Jace, raised his witchlight. "Is something wrong?" Jace slowed his pace as he neared his parabatai. "I just wanted to make sure you were right." Alec shrugged with one shoulder. "As much as I can be, I guess." "I'm sorry," Jace said. "Again. I take stupid risks. I can't help it." "We let you," said Alec. "Sometimes your risks pay off. We let you because we have to let you. Because if we didn't let you, nothing would ever get done." He rubbed at his face with his torn sleeve. "Isabel would say the same thing." "We never got to finish our conversation before," Jace said. "I just wanted to say that you don't always have to be all right. I asked you to be my parabatai because I needed you. But you're allowed to need me too. This," he indicated his own parabatai rune, "means you are the better, other half of me. And I care about you more than I care about myself. Remember that. I'm sorry I didn't realize how much you were hurting. I didn't see it then, but I see it now." Alec was very still for a moment, barely breathing. Then, to Jace's surprise, he reached out and ruffled Jace's hair, the way an older brother might ruffle his younger sibling's hair. His smile was cautious, but it was full of real affection. "Thanks for seeing me," he said, and walked off down the tunnel.
Clary? She woke up slowly, out of mellow dreams of warmth and fire, the smell of hay and apples. In the dream, she'd been on Luke's farm, hanging upside down from a tree branch, laughing as Simon waved from below. Slowly, she became aware of the hard stone under her hips and back, her head pillowed on Jace's legs. "Clary," he said again, still whispering. Simon and Isabel were sprawled together some distance away, a dark heap in the shadows. Jace's eyes glimmered down at her, pale gold and dancing with reflected firelight. "I want a bath." "Yeah, well, I want $1 million, she said, rubbing at her eyes. "We all want something." He cocked an eyebrow. "Come on, think about it," he said. "That cavern, the one with the lake? We could..." Clary thought of the cavern, the lovely blue water as deep as twilight, and felt suddenly as if she were encrusted with a layer of grime, dirt and blood and ichor and sweat, her hair knotted back into a greasy tangle. Jace's eyes danced, and Clary felt that familiar surge inside her chest, that pull that she had felt since the first time she'd ever seen him. She couldn't pinpoint the exact moment she'd fallen in love with Jace, but there had always been something about him that reminded her of a lion, a wild animal unfettered by rules, the promise of a life of freedom. Never I can't, but always I can. Always the risk and the surety, never the fear or the question. She scrambled to her feet as quietly as she could. "All right." He was up instantly, taking her hand and tugging her down the west corridor that led away from the central cave. They went in silence, her witchlight lighting the way, a silence Clary felt almost afraid to break, as if she would be shattering the illusory calm of a dream or a spell. The massive cavern opened in front of them suddenly, and she put her runestone away, dousing its light. The bioluminescence of the cave was enough, light shimmering out from the walls, from the glimmering stalactites that hung from the roof like electrified icicles. Knives of light pierced the shadows. Jace let go of her hand and walked down the steps of the path down to the edge of the water, where the small beach was powdery and fine, glittering with mica. He paused a few feet from the water and said, "Thank you." She looked over at him in surprise. "For what?" "Last night," he said. "You saved me. The heavenly fire would have killed me, I think. What you did... We still can't tell the others, she said.
I didn't last night, did I? He asked.
It was true. Jace and Clary had maintained the fiction that Clary had simply helped Jace control and dissipate the fire, and that nothing else had changed. We can't risk them giving it away, even by the wrong kind of glance or expression, she said. You and I, we've had some practice hiding things from Sebastian, but they haven't. It wouldn't be fair to them. I almost wish we didn't know. She trailed off, unnerved by his lack of response. Jace was looking at the water, blue and depthless, his back to her. She took a step forward and tapped him lightly on the shoulder. Jace, she said, if you want to do something different, if you think we should make another plan. He turned and suddenly she was in the circle of his arms. It sent a shock through her whole body. His hands cupped her shoulder blades, his fingers stroking lightly along the material of her shirt. She shivered, thoughts flying out of her head like feathers scattered on the wind. When, he said, did you get so careful? I'm not careful, she said as he touched his lips to her temple. His warm breath stirred the curls by her ear. I'm just not you. She felt him laugh. His hand slid down her sides, gripped her waist. That you are definitely not. Much prettier. You must love me, she said, breath hitching as his lips traveled excruciatingly slowly along her jaw. I never thought you'd admit anyone was prettier than you. She started as his mouth found her own, his lips parting to taste hers, and she leaned up and into the kiss, determined to take back some control. She wound her arms around his neck, opening her mouth to him, and nipped gently at his bottom lip. It had more of an effect than she'd bargained for. His hands tightened on her waist, and he groaned low into her mouth. A moment later, he'd broken away, flushed, his eyes glittering. You're all right, he said. You want this? She nodded, swallowing. Her whole body felt as if it were vibrating like a plucked string. Yes, I do, It's just, for so long I haven't really been able to touch you, and now I can, he said. But maybe this isn't the place. Well, we are filthy, she admitted. Filthy seems a bit judgmental. Clary raised her hands, palms up. There was dirt embedded in her skin and under her nails. She grinned at him. I mean literally, she said, and indicated the water nearby with a jerk of her chin. Won't we go and wash off? In the water? The sparkle in his eyes darkened them to amber. Right, he said, and reached up to unzip his jacket. Clary almost squeaked, What are you doing? But it was perfectly obvious what he was doing. She'd said in the water, and it wasn't like they could wade in with their gear on. She just hadn't quite thought this far ahead. He dropped the jacket and pulled his t-shirt off over his head. The collar caught for a moment, and Clary just stared, suddenly hyper-aware of the fact that they were alone, and of his body. Honey-colored skin mapped with old and new marks, a fading scar just under the curve of his left pectoral muscle. Flat, ridged stomach tapering to narrow hips. He'd lost weight, and his weapons belt hung loose. Legs, arms, graceful like a dancer's. He pulled free of the shirt and shook out his bright hair, and she thought with a sudden sinking in her stomach that it just wasn't possible that he was hers. He wasn't that sort of person ordinary people got to be near, much less touch. And then he looked up at her, hands on his belt, and smiled his familiar crooked smile. "Keeping your clothes on," he said. I could promise not to look, but I'd be lying. Clary unzipped her gear jacket and threw it at him. He caught it and dropped it onto the pile of his clothes, grinning. He unlooped his belt, dropped it as well. Pervert, she said, though you get points for being honest about it. I'm 17, we're all perverts, he said, kicking his shoes off and stepping out of his pants. He was wearing black boxer shorts, and to Clary's mixed relief and slight regret, he kept them on as he stepped into the water, wading in knee-deep. Or at least I'll be 17 in a few weeks, he called back over his shoulder. I did the math with my father's letters in the time of the uprising. I was born in January. Something about the complete normalcy of his tone set Clary at ease. She towed off her boots, pulled her t-shirt off and then her pants, and went into the edge of the water. It was cool but not cold, lapping up to her ankles. Jace looked up at her and smiled. His eyes traveled down from her face to her body, her plain cotton panties and bra. She wished she'd worn something prettier, but it wasn't like fancy lingerie had been on her packing list for the demon realms. Her bra was pale blue cotton, the totally boring kind you could buy at the supermarket, though Jace was looking at it like it was something exotic and amazing. He flushed suddenly and averted his eyes, backing away so that the water rose to cover him, up to his shoulders. He ducked under and resurfaced again, looking less flustered but a lot wetter, his hair dark gold and streaming rivulets. "It's easier if you get in fast," he said. Clary took a breath and dived forward, the water closing over her head. And it was gorgeous, dark blue shot with threads of silver from the light above. The powdery stone had mixed with the water, giving it a heavy, soft texture. It was easy to float. The moment she let herself, she bobbed to the surface, shaking water from her hair. She sighed in relief. There was no soap, but she rubbed her hands together, watching the flakes of dirt and blood melt away into the water. Her hair floated on the surface, red mixing with the blue. A spray of water droplets made her look up. Jace was a few feet away, shaking out his hair. "I guess that makes me a year older than you," he said. "I'm cradle robbing." 6 months, Clary corrected. "And you're a Capricorn, huh? Stubborn, reckless, bends the rules. Sounds about right." He caught hold of her hips and pulled her toward him through the water. It was just deep enough that his feet touched the ground, but hers didn't quite. She clenched her hands on his shoulders to keep herself upright as he drew her legs around his waist. She stared down at him, heat coiling in her stomach, at the sleek wet lines of his neck and shoulders and chest, the water droplets caught in his eyelashes like stars. He rose up to kiss her just as she leaned in. Their lips crashed together with a force that sent a shock of pleasure pain through her. His hands slid up her skin. She cupped the back of his head, fingers tangling in wet curls. He parted her lips, stroked inside with his tongue. They were both shuddering and she was gasping, her breath mingling with his. He reached behind himself with one hand to steady them on the wall of the cave, but it was slick with water and he half slipped. Clary broke away from kissing him as he found his footing, his left arm still wrapped tightly against her, pressing her body to his. His pupils were blown wide, his heart hammering against her. "That was..." he gasped and pressed his face to the juncture of her neck and shoulder and breathed as if he were breathing her in. He was shaking a little, although his grip on her was steady and firm. "That was... intense." "It's been a while," she murmured, touching his hair gently. "Since we could, you know, let go. At all. I can't believe it," he said. "I still can't, that I can kiss you now, touch you, actually touch you, without being afraid." He pressed a kiss to her throat and she jumped. He tipped his head back to look up at her. Water trickled down his face like tears, outlining the sharp edges of cheekbones, the curve of his jaw. "Reckless," he said. "You know, when I first showed up at the Institute, Alec called me reckless so many times that I went and looked it up in the dictionary. Not that I didn't already know what it meant, but I always kind of thought it meant brave. It actually meant someone who doesn't care about the consequences of their actions." Clary felt stung on behalf of small Jace. "But you do care." "Not enough, maybe. Not all the time." His voice shook. "Like the way I love you, I loved you recklessly from the moment I knew you. I never cared about the consequences. I told myself I did. I told myself you wanted me to, and so I tried, but I never did. I wanted you more than I wanted to be good. I wanted you more than I wanted anything, ever." His muscles were rigid under her grip, his body thrumming with tension. She leaned in to brush her lips across his, to kiss the tension away, but he pulled back, biting against his lower lip hard enough to whiten the skin. "Clary," he said roughly, "wait, just wait." Clary felt momentarily dazed. Jace loved kissing. He could kiss for hours and he was good at it. And he wasn't uninterested, he was very interested. She braced her knees on either side of his hips and said uncertainly, "Is everything all right?" "I have to tell you something." "Oh no." She dropped her head onto his shoulder. "Okay, what is it?" "Remember when we came through into the demon realm and everyone saw something?" he asked. "And I said I didn't." "You don't have to tell me what you saw," Clary said gently. "It's your business." "I do,"
he said. You should know I saw a room with two thrones in it, gold and ivory thrones, and through the window I could see the world, and it was ashes. Like this world, but the destruction was newer. The fires were still burning, and the sky was full of horrible flying things. Sebastian was sitting on one of the thrones, and I was sitting on the other. You were there, and Alec, and Izzy, and Max. He swallowed. But you were all in a cage. A big cage with a massive lock on the door, and I knew I had put you in it, and turned the key. But I didn't feel regret, I felt triumph. He exhaled hard. You can shove me away in disgust now, it's fine. But of course it wasn't fine. Nothing about his tone, flat and dead and devoid of hope, was fine. Clary shivered in his arms, not from horror but from pity, and from the tension of knowing how delicate Jace's faith in himself was, and how careful her answer had to be. The demon showed us what it thought we wanted, she said finally. Not what we actually want. It got things wrong. That's how we all managed to break free. By the time we found you, you'd already broken free on your own. So what it showed you, that wasn't what you want. When Valentine raised you, he controlled everything. Nothing was ever safe, and nothing you loved was safe. So the demon looked inside you and saw that. That child's fantasy of completely controlling the world so nothing bad could happen to the people he loves. And it tried to give you that, but it wasn't what you want, not really. So you woke up. She touched his cheek. Some part of you is still that little boy who thinks to love is to destroy, but you're learning every day. For a moment, he just looked at her in astonishment, his lips parted slightly. Clary felt her cheeks flush. He was looking at her like she was the first star that had ever come out in the sky, a miracle painted across the face of the world that he could barely believe in. Let me, he said and broke off. Can I kiss you? Instead of nodding, she leaned down to press her lips to his. If their first kiss in the water had been a sort of explosion, this was like a sun going supernova. It was a hard, hot, driving kiss, a nip at her lower lip, and the clash of tongues and teeth, both of them pressing as hard as they could to get close, closer. They were glued together, skin and fabric, a heady mix of the chill of the water, the heat of their bodies, and the frictionless slide of damp skin. His arms wrapped her completely, and suddenly he was lifting her as he walked them both out the lake, water pouring off them in streams. He went down on his knees on the powdery sand beach, laying her as gently as he could on top of the pile of the heaped clothes. She scrabbled for purchase for a moment and then gave up, lying back and pulling him down on top of her, kissing him fiercely until he groaned and whispered, Clary, I can't. You have to tell me, I can't think. She wound her hands into his hair, drawing back just enough to see his face. He was flushed, his eyes black with desire, his hair beginning to curl as it dried, hanging into his eyes. She tugged lightly at the strands wound between her fingers. It's okay, she whispered back. It's okay, we don't have to stop, I want to. She kissed him slow and hard. I want to if you do. If I want to? There was a wild edge to his soft laugh. Can't you tell? And then he was kissing her again, sucking her lower lip into his mouth, kissing her throat and mouthing her collarbone as she ran her hands all over him, free in the knowledge that she could touch him as much as she liked, however she liked. She felt as if she were drawing him, her hands mapping his body, the slope of his back, flat stomach, the indentations above his hips, the muscles in his arms, as if, like a painting, he were coming to life under her hands. When his hand slid underneath her bra, she gasped at the sensation, then nodded at him when he froze, his eyes questioning. Go on. He stopped at each moment, stopped before removing each piece of clothing from either of them, asking with eyes and words if he should keep going, and each time she nodded and said, Yes, go on, yes. And when finally there was nothing between them but skin, she stilled her hands, thinking that there was no way to ever be closer to a person than this. That to take another step would be like cracking open her chest and exposing her heart. She felt Jace's muscles flex as he reached past her for something and heard the crackle of foil. Suddenly, everything seemed very real. She felt the sudden flash of nerves. This was really happening. He stilled,
His free hand was cradling her head, his elbows dug deep into the sand on either side of her, keeping his weight off her body. All of him was tense and shaking, and the pupils of his eyes were wide, the irises just rims of gold. Is something wrong? Hearing Jay sound uncertain, she thought maybe her heart was cracking, shattering into pieces. No, she whispered and pulled him down again. They both tasted salt. Kiss me, she pleaded, and he did, hot, languorous, slow kisses that sped up as his heartbeat did, as the movement of their bodies quickened against each other. Each kiss was different, each rising higher and higher like a spark as a fire grew. Quick, soft kisses that told her he loved her, long, slow, worshipful kisses that said he trusted her, playful, light kisses that said that he still had hope, adoring kisses that said he had faith in her as he did in no one else. Clary abandoned herself to the kisses, the language of them, the wordless speech that passed between the two of them. His hands were shaking, but they were quick and skilled on her body, light touches maddening her until she pushed and pulled at him, urging him on with the mute appeal of fingers and lips and hands. And even at the final moment when she did flinch, she pressed him to go on, wrapping herself around him, not letting him go. She kept her eyes wide open as he shuddered apart, his face against her neck, saying her name over and over, and when finally she closed her eyes, she thought she saw the cavern blaze up in gold and white, wrapping them both in heavenly fire, the most beautiful thing she had ever seen.
Simon was vaguely aware of Clary and Jace standing up and leaving the cavern, whispering to each other as they went. Not as subtle as you think you are, he thought of them, half amused. But he hardly grudged them the time together, considering what they were all going to face the next day.
Simon.
It was barely a whisper, but Simon propped himself up on his elbow and looked down at Isabel. She turned onto her back and gazed up at him. Her eyes were very huge and dark. Her cheeks flushed. His chest tightened with anxiety.
Are you all right? He said. Are you feverish?
She shook her head and wiggled partway out of her cocoon of blankets.
Just warm. Who wrapped me up like a mummy?
Alec, Simon said. I mean, maybe you should stay in them. I'd rather not, Isabel said, wrapping her arms around his shoulders and pulling him close to her. I can't warm you up. No body heat. His voice sounded a little tinny. She nuzzled her way into the juncture of his collarbone and shoulder. I think we have established in so many ways that I am hot enough for the both of us. Unable to help it, Simon reached out to run his hands up her back. She had shed her gear and wore only a black thermal top, the material thick and soft under his fingers. She felt substantial and real, human and breathing. And he silently thanked the god whose name he could now say that she was all right.
Is there anyone else here?
Jason Clary snuck off, and Alec took first watch, Simon said. We're alone. I mean, not alone alone, like, I wouldn't... He gasped as she rolled over so that she was on top of him, pinning him to the ground. She laid an arm delicately across his chest. I wouldn't maybe do that, he said. Not that you should stop. You saved my life, she said. I didn't. He broke off as she narrowed her eyes. I am a brave, heroic rescuer, he tried. Mm-hmm. She nudged his chin with hers. No Lord Montgomery stuff, he warned. Anyone could walk in. What about regular kissing? Seems all right, he said. And immediately Isabel was kissing him, her lips almost unbearably soft. His hands found their way up under her shirt and smoothed up her spine, tracing the line of her shoulder blades. When she broke away, her lips were reddened, and he could see the blood pounding in her throat. Isabel's blood, salty sweet. And even though he wasn't hungry, he wanted.
You can bite me, she whispered.
No. Simon wriggled back slightly. No, you've lost too much blood, I can't. He could feel his chest heaving with unnecessary breath. You were asleep when we were talking about it, but we can't stay here. Clary put glamour runes on the entrances, but they won't hold that long and we're running out of food. The atmosphere is making everyone sicker and weaker, and Sebastian will find us. We have to go to him tomorrow at the guard. He raked curled fingers through her soft hair. And that means you need all your strength. She pressed her lips together, her eyes darting over him. When we came through from the fairy court, into this world, what did you see? He touched her face lightly, not wanting to lie, but the truth. The truth was hard and awkward. Iz, we don't have to. I saw Max, she said. But I saw you too. You were my boyfriend. We lived together and my whole family accepted you. I can tell myself I don't want you to be part of my life. But my heart knows differently, she said. You weaseled your way into my life, Simon Lewis. And I don't know how or why or even when, but it happened. And I kind of hate it, but I can't change it. And here it is. He made a small choking sound. Isabel? Now tell me what you saw, she said, and her eyes glittered like mica. Simon braced his hands against the stone floor of the cave. I saw me being famous. A rock star, he said slowly. I was rich. My family was together. And I was with Clary. She was my girlfriend. He felt Isabel tense on top of him. Felt her start to roll away, and he caught at her arms. Isabel, listen. Listen. She was my girlfriend. And then when she came to tell me she loved me, I said, I love you too. Isabel. She stared at him. Isabel, he said. It snapped me out of the vision when I said your name. Because I knew the vision was wrong. It wasn't what I really wanted. Why do you tell me you love me only when you're drunk or dreaming? She asked. I have awful timing, said Simon. But it doesn't mean I don't mean it. There are things we want, down under what we know, even under what we feel. There are things our souls want, and mine wants you. He felt her exhale. Say it, she said. Say it, Soba. I love you, he said. I don't want you to say it back unless you mean it, but I love you. She leaned back over him and pressed the pads of her fingertips against his. I mean it. He raised himself up on his elbows, just as she leaned down, and their lips met. They kissed, long and soft and sweet and gentle. And then Isabel pulled back slightly, her breathing ragged, and Simon said, So, have we DTR'd now? Isabel shrugged. I have no idea what that means. Simon hid the fact that he was inordinately pleased by this. Are we officially boyfriend and girlfriend? Is there a shadow hunter ritual? Should I change my Facebook status from it's complicated to in a relationship? Isabel screwed up her nose adorably. You have a book that's also a face. Simon laughed, and Isabel bent down and kissed him again. This time he reached up to draw her down, and they wrapped themselves around each other, tangled in blankets, kissing and whispering. He lost himself in the pleasure of the taste of her mouth, the curve of her hip under his hand, the warm skin of her back. He forgot that they were in a demon realm, that they were going into battle the next day, that they might never see home again. Everything faded away, and it was Isabel.
Why does this keep happening?
There was a sound of shattering glass as they both sat up to see Alec glaring at them. He had dropped the empty bottle of wine he had been carrying, and there were bits of sparkly glass all over the cave floor.
Why can't you go somewhere else to do these horrible things? My eyes!
It's a demon realm, Alec, Isabel said. There's nowhere for us to go.
And you said I should look after her, Simon began, then realized that this would not be a productive line of conversation, and shut up.
Alec flopped down on the opposite side of the fire and glared at them both.
And where have Jace and Clary gone?
Ah, said Simon delicately. Who can say?
Straight people, Alec declared.
Why can't they control themselves? It's a mystery, Simon agreed, and lay back down to sleep.
Gia Penhallow sat on the desk in her office. It felt so casual. She couldn't help but wonder if it would be frowned on, the console sitting irreverently on the ancient desk of power. But she was alone in the room and tired beyond all measures of tired. In her hand, she gripped a note that had come from New York. A warlock's fire message, powerful enough to bypass the wards around the city. She recognized the handwriting.